Thank you very much, Werner Baumann. Thank you very much, Wolfgang Nickel. Ladies and gentlemen, you can now ask your questions, as Ms. Ernst will explain. Ladies and gentlemen, we shall now start with the Q&A session. If you would like to ask a question, please press 9 and star on your telephone. If you would like to retract your question, please press 9 and star on your telephone again. And the first question from Hendrik Janberg. Just one moment, please. Just bear with me one moment until we have the first question. From the Tagesspiegel, the first question. Thank you very much. Good morning. I have a question regarding the Roundup litigations. Mr. Baumann, you said that you had reached a settlement for about 88,000 plaintiffs. There are a number of other litigations ongoing. How many cases are still open and ongoing? And the second question here would be, what solution are you trying to find for future settlements and to try and find legal security here? That was a particular bone of contention here. Thank you very much, Ms. Janbeck, for your question. Regarding the first question for these 88,500 suits, we have actually reached a settlement now. Furthermore, we have further plaintiffs with whom we are currently in discussions. On the 24th of June, we had 120,000 cases that we mentioned, and we don't have any updated figure here because, of course, the number of suits and cases has to be verified as to whether they are actually valid. So that is the reference that I can tell you at the moment. Regarding your second question, we had already announced at the beginning of September that we were speaking to the representatives of future affected persons, or this memorandum of understanding, as it's called, and this memorandum of understanding addresses the concerns that Judge Chabria had, that he announced on the 6th of July, and we are currently trying to enshrine this memorandum of understanding as a contract, and in the coming weeks we shall be filing this with Judge Chabria for preliminary approval. The next question is from Jonas Janssen from the FAZ newspaper. Good morning. In your ad hoc announcement, you referred to negative effects. I suspect that these effects are now more severe. I suspect also the glyphosate negative effects will be more severe as well. So I would like to know how you see the future. But also the Monsanto acquisition, from today's perspective, was that a good idea? Thank you very much for your question. We did state a framework within which we would be in with our adjustments, and that was referring to the deadline of the 30th of September. And we are still within that range that we had communicated. And as you mentioned, we're still actually in the upper area of that framework. Glyphosate is a little more expensive. We have already specifically stated here that this is within the implementation of the Memorandum of Understanding, referring to adjustment that we have introduced to take into account the concerns of Judge Chabria. and we're talking about $750 million. And this is exclusively regarding the future, and I hope that that has answered your question. And then the next question from Reuters. The floor is yours.
Thank you and good morning. Could you indicate what has changed in the Futurica? And then second question with regard to the amortization to the write-offs. I would like to have more details about those, please. Then, can you tell us a time frame within which the existing cases will be taken care of? Answer. Good morning, Mr. Berger. I'll begin with the first and then with the last question, and then with regard to the breakdown between Monsanto and Bayer. Well, Mr. Nickel will answer that. The details on the negotiations regarding the memorandum of understanding and how it will be implemented are, of course, confidential. So that means, with the exception of what's been communicated so far, I can't tell you any more details, and I would request that you understand this, please. I can just say that the framework for the negotiations, of the negotiations that we're in, do take into account the concerns of the judge, to his satisfaction, at least that is our opinion, and that will also take into account of anyone who might fall ill in the future. And then with regard to the time frame for handling the existing cases, I can just say that we're in active negotiations now and that this is a process that we don't have completely in our own control, of course. That means we have to wait to see what the results of negotiations are within the framework that we've set. But we're confident, and you see that if you look at the numbers that we've achieved so far, and so we're confident that in the next few months we're going to see further substantial improvement. Yes, let me answer the question about depreciation write-offs. Well, it's about $9.3 billion, and it's hard to say exactly what is Monsanto, what is Bayer. We have one Crop Science business, but let me just give you two details. We're talking about $7 billion of intangible assets in cash-generating units, and there is corn and soybeans and vegetables and Roundup, and there's about $2 billion for goodwill. And let me add one more thing about the depreciation and why we're at the upper end of the quarter, and we're also already mentioned this. This is connected to the situation at the end of the quarter. And let me add here that this depreciation is based on two different things. First of all, growth expectations are now lower because last year we saw no growth, very little growth this year, but also it's expressly a result of currency and interest effects. I can give you an order of magnitude for the whole amount of depreciation. I can say that two-thirds of that is a result of discount factors, weighted average cost of capital, and one-third is from growth. So this gives you a little bit of a background as to why we had a range and now why we're at the top end of that range. Next question is from Annette Becker, Börsenzeitung. The floor is yours. Yes, good morning to everyone. I have two questions. First of all, it's about your outlook there. You talk about the currency-adjusted result and then the one without that. And I'm talking about the adjusted one, which is the basis for your dividend policy, the 30 to 40%. Well, that refers to which one, the one including currency adjustments or without currency adjustments. And then I'd like to know about your savings program that you announced at the end of September. By when do you expect to be able to tell us more details, in particular with regard to the costs? And during the current fiscal year, will they be included in your numbers, in your balance sheet? Good morning, Ms. Becker. I'm Wolfgang Nickel. With regard to your first question, well, our dividend policy is 30 to 40% of core EPS, including currency. So that refers to the 630 to 650. And we said that quite probably we'll be at the lower end during this time period. Then savings program, $1.5 billion plus. We haven't specified that yet. This is, of course, being detailed right now in the different divisions and in different areas, of course, including the negotiations with labor representatives around the world. And very clearly, what's important is to continue to assure that Bayer is secure for the future, Bayer 2025, and this rules out redundancies up until then, and it's being detailed right now, and details will be available, I think, at the beginning of next year, and then we have our Capital Market Day, which will be at the end of February, probably early March, and by then we'll hopefully be able to tell you more details. Then measures with regard to savings in terms of overheads and manpower costs. Well, it's hard to talk about one-off costs here, but just as a general orientation, I can tell you we have a factor of 1.7 that we mentioned in 2018 for this program. And if you're not familiar with the measures, well, you really can't make any provisions yet. So at the end of this year, I don't think we should look forward to any provisions by then.
Next question, Patrick Tavares from Reuters. The floor is yours. Yes, good morning to Leverkusen. I would like to ask about the revised concept regarding the litigation and why you have that. I understand that you won't be able to give us any details, but perhaps you can give us some general information. You could maybe tell us what the revised strategy will apply to. Maybe you will have more clarification for next year as well. And maybe you can also tell us what the overall loss might be. Thank you. If I can just respond to your first question before I pass on to Wolfgang Nickel to tell you something about the overall year. I think the figures can be found in our guidance and are clear there. Beyond the concept which is currently being negotiated and the fact that we have this memorandum of understanding that has been signed by both sides, I can only reiterate what I said. I can't give you any further details here. The negotiations are confidential. We are within a closed memorandum of understanding and details are currently being negotiated and put into writing. I can't tell you anything more about that. The second point regarding the non-strategic operations, we've already said that we will look at our portfolio and our non-strategic operations. We see this outside of the portfolio. This is always an ongoing process. We're going to intensify that somewhat. For example, in this quarter, we are selling smaller brands that don't fit in with the overall portfolio, for example, in consumer health. And we are now looking at somewhat larger divisions and business units, which are not necessarily a core part of our strategy. What they will be in detail, I cannot tell you at the moment. We are currently discussing these and analyzing these at management level, and when we can tell you more, there will be a supervisory board announcement after agreement with that. Regarding any redundancies or job cuts, it is to be expected that there will be redundancies, but where they will be made and when, I can't tell you beyond the already known programs. I can't tell you any more details here, as Wolfgang Nickel has already said. But as Wolfgang said, this is probably not expected before the end of the year. Well, I would just like to say something about the guidance for 2020. I would like to reiterate as well that the core EPS will, after currency effects, which have been significant, will be around 6.30 to 6.50 euros. And just by way of comparison, last year we were talking about 6.38, so I don't think we need to hide behind the situation. And then we, of course, have a number of special items, and we've already spoken about the impairment, 9.3 billion. We also, at the beginning of the year, spoke about further effects from restructuring measures, which is somewhat over 1 billion, that's also known. And then if we look at all of the various lawsuits, Dicamba, Glyphosate, Assure, and so on and so forth, we're talking around 13 billion euros. And that is all offset somewhat by gains from sales of the animal health business. And that is at an estimated 5.2 billion euros. But it has to be noted here that that will, of course, be corrected, I think, around 120 days after conclusion. That will be in November at some stage. But these are the basic parameters that you can be aware of here. The next question. BPA. The floor is yours. Good morning. Thank you very much. Where are we after following the announcements that you made about your divisions in 2018? 12,000 jobs were to be cut. How many jobs have been cut, and when will that process be concluded? Thank you very much for your question, Wolfgang. Nico here. We are making good progress here in a number of divisions. Overall, we were talking about 2.6 billion euros of savings and sales synergies that we announced at the time, and we achieved over 30% this year. We originally wanted to achieve 40 and 60 next year, and then be finished completely in 2022. We are doing better than we'd originally planned. This year we'll be going more towards 60%. We have accelerated things here, and one-off costs are very much within plan. 1.7 is the factor there. And as you already mentioned as well, about 12,000 positions. I don't know the exact figure. I think last year we were around 104,000 people working for us, and at the moment we have around 101,000. So 3,000 to 3,500 people who have been made redundant. And so of the 12,000, how many have already been cut? Because in 2018, you already began with this process, did you not? Well, I would have to check those figures. I don't have the figures here. I just know that this year we're talking about 3,500 people. And the 60% that you said, this is the savings and the synergies that you're talking about. That's 60% that you will have achieved by the end of the year. Is that what you were referring to? Yes, that is correct. Thank you.
The next question, Antje Hoenig, Rheinische Post. The floor is yours. Good morning. I've got three questions. I'd like to hear about the job cuts, too. If you look at the math, you're talking about cutting 7,000 jobs, 2.6 billion. That's 12,000. And now with this figure at 7,000, is that the right numbers that I'm looking at? And then I'd like to hear something about the dividend. The stockholders have to prepare for a decline. How much of a decline will that be? And you didn't give us an answer to what the other colleague asked. Was the Monsanto purchase a mistake? That was the question from the FAZ colleague. Good morning. Well, with regard to the size of the workforce reduction, I can't tell you anything right now about that. Wolfgang Nickel already said that we are in the planning process right now. We're also in the process of identifying the measures and detailing these measures. There will be cuts in overheads, and we'll cut them as much as we can, of course, and this will, of course, be manpower costs, too. But I can't tell you right now how much that will account for. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't say that, and that will be communicated next year. Then with regard to the dividend, Wolfgang Nickel already really said it all. We are within the corridor of 30 to 40% of the core earnings per share. And with regard to the dividend to be proposed by management, well, this has to be discussed by the Board of Management and Supervisor Board, and therefore, at the current point in time, I can't tell you anything about that. In addition to that, well, we talked about our agricultural business, and in my preliminary remarks, I said quite a bit about that, I believe, as to why we're quite confident for that business. We've always been confident about it. That hasn't changed, and I can say specifically that this won't change due to the current crisis. I'd like to point out once again what Wolfgang Nickel mentioned. Two-thirds of the value adjustment or impairments we're seeing are driven by currency and interest effects, and one-third is due to growth changes. Now, here we've got to see that if you compare this to the market growth that we originally looked at, and we can decouple from that in 2019 and 2020 and 2021, the way it looks, there will be a clearly weaker environment, and this means that due to the relevance of the earlier years, this will have a major impact on the valuation. But regardless of that, we believe that this business over the long term is very, very well positioned with the leading positions that we have here. And in addition to that, there'll be long-term growth in the market. This hasn't changed either. And I think we have to distinguish things here. The current situation is one thing, and that's the situation at this point in time, and you've got to look at that. And then on the other hand, the strategic prospects for our business. Thank you. And one more question. In view of the dramatic decline in the stock price, 40 euros, do you feel that Bayer might become a candidate for a takeover? Well, we're doing good business. We've got a lot of value in the company. The stock price is not something that we establish. Our job is to manage the company as best as possible. And then we think that the value that we believe the company has will, at some point in time, be reflected in the stock price. Thank you.
The next question, please. You have the floor. Yes, good morning from Frankfurt. Regarding your agricultural business and the correction you had, cash for several products, and this is all connected with the correction. Can you tell us if this has a direct correlation with the litigations in the USA? Because at the end of the day, the Monsanto image is rather damaged, and that could also have a negative effect on the demand for the product. So can you tell us, in simple terms, whether the litigations have any connection with the changes here? And Monsanto, you've said that you're absolutely convinced that the purchase and acquisition was a good idea. Could you at least admit that you paid too high a price in hindsight? Good morning. Thank you for your question. Let me go back to the year 2016, but just very briefly. The price that we paid in 2016 was a result of competition and bids at the time, and we had to look at the stock levels of Monsanto, and the price that we paid, we weren't actually that far away from what Monsanto itself had in its market capitalization, as it had been rated around a year and a half before. So I don't think there is anything else I can say about this. We always have to look at the particular time in that context and then look at the activities that resulted therefrom. For the second question, I would like to pass on to Wolfgang Nickel. Well, I would say no. Of course, it's very difficult now to say what the long-term volume effects were. Perhaps one customer didn't make purchases due to the litigations, but I can say that even in the consumer sector with Roundup in the USA, we don't have any considerable significant effects in the figures there, so that's why I would say generally no. Thank you. The next question, Hultvender, Wall Street Journal. The floor is yours. Yes, thank you. I just wanted to refer to the glyphosate litigations and also the California court rejected your appeal. How will you progress here? What does this mean for your long-term strategy to generate success and also try and achieve a positive ruling for yourselves? Thank you. Answer. Yes, good morning, Ms. Bender. I suspect that you're referring to the Johnson proceedings, and of course regarding the appeal we are disappointed, and we are currently looking at the next steps regarding the appeal at the US Supreme Court, and we're preparing all of this accordingly. And the most important case for us is of course the Hardeman case, for many reasons, because the proceedings is somewhat quicker, the potential proceedings at the U.S. Supreme Court. The next question is from Jens Tunisman of the Zeit newspaper. The floor is yours. Good morning. I have a question which refers to the guidance. Today is a very important day. We have the U.S. elections and new politicians, and we can see what kind of donations have been made. And we have the political action campaign, and we see that they have also been involved with the Republican candidates. But from the employees from Bayer, there's been more money going to Biden. And Mr. Bauman in 2016, Trump had just been elected, well, would you be happy to see Trump re-elected because you already have a connection, or are you more on the side of your U.S. employees who are more supportive of Biden? What is your position here as Bayer? Thank you very much for your question. Regarding the Political Action Committee, this is a committee which is exclusively made up of employees who make their own decisions. That doesn't have anything to do with the company. Even if the committee is called BAPAC. And just to make this clear, we are not talking about presidency candidates being supported here. Regarding the outcome of the elections, we're very anxious to see what will happen in the next few weeks, also regarding the effects on our business. And we hope that we will be able to work with either administration on a good basis.
Next question is from Bine Rinbush, ATM Health Europe. The floor is yours. Thank you. You mentioned that the acquisition has been agreed on. And could you tell us about the acquisition for AskBio? Could you tell us more about the pipeline effect and also about the late stage pipeline at Bayer in pharmaceuticals? Thank you. Thank you for the question, Ms. Bush, first of all. Well, we do have some products in the late-stage pipeline that were there in the last 18 to 24 months that have come out of that pipeline, and it's always good to have products in the late pipeline that are then licensed, for instance, in oncology, Truckee and Dubeca. And despite the very difficult situation with licensing for a new product, in the pandemic, we are still very hopeful here. We think this is very promising, and we believe that the revenues and growth rates will be above our expectations. And in this situation in particular, well, our plans called for normal business activities, and despite the pandemic, we see much more momentum here, and this is one of the biggest products in terms of its potential that we've got. Wolfgang Nickel already talked about the positive study result in the pipeline for Copanlisib and Zupirenone, and that is another one of the biggest pipeline products in terms of potential revenues. He pointed these out. And, of course, we've done a few other things, too, which help us out in our medium to long-term prospects. Just beyond, of course, beyond the short-term prospects, and that makes us optimistic for our pharmaceuticals business. First of all, with Candy Pharmaceuticals, we've got an acquisition of late pipeline products in women's health, and this is the area where we are leading around the world with a new effective mechanism for treatment of menopause. It's a very attractive product that next year will go into phase three of clinical testing and clinical development. In addition to that, we've got big hopes with regard to further progress with Neura. And we're working here in the field of cell therapy, and if this is successful, and the preclinical studies that have been a success indicate this, and this, we believe, might give us an opportunity for the first possible curative treatment. That is, curative treatment of Parkinson's disease. Now, these, of course, are all high-risk projects, but you see what the potential there is, and also the commitment of our organization. You see that we're very serious about health for all and hunger for none. And then, last but not least, with regard to Ask Bio, that's a very interesting company because they really have a lot in that company, and therefore I'd like to expressly thank you for that question. First of all, they have many, many patents there, big repository of patents that we're acquiring with the acquisition there, and they have a team in the field of AAV vectors that is doing, has done pioneering work for more than 20 years. And this expertise is now coming into our company, and this expertise can be used in different divisions. It's like with biotechnology 25 years ago with the cell and gene therapy treatments that are currently being developed in many different companies. There are chronic bottlenecks that we can already anticipate here in production, and Ask Bio is bringing to us a production platform in clinical right now, and it's being built up right now. It'll probably be available in 2022, and it'll add production capacities for us that will give us growth and earnings and very attractive margins, in addition to the further build-up of our experience in production of these therapies. Furthermore, we already have a clinical portfolio of clinical candidates, development candidates in phase one for Humpet's disease and heart disease, and also for Parkinson again. And in the next few years, as I already said, you have the R&D machine at Ask Bio, and each and every year, you have further development candidates coming out of that. And they will significantly complement our long-term pipeline. But over the short term, you don't think there are any more candidates that could be marketed soon? No. In the short term, well, those profit contributions will come from licensing, and Ask Bio will already provide us a positive EBITDA contribution next year. And over the medium term, then, there will be the other effects seen from our own pipeline, too, that we will be able to take advantage of. And then, of course, from contract production, as I already mentioned. Thank you. Great. Next question is in English at AFP. The floor is yours.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. There's been a lot of concentration in the press about Roundup. I want to ask about Esher, which has affected 40,000 women. You say in your report that you are in resolution discussions with counsel for the remaining plaintiffs. Can I get an update on that? What exactly does that mean? And my second question, in this 26-page report, unless my control F function doesn't work, you never mentioned Brexit. Can I get a number, a figure, of what the impairment would be that you'd have to put into your yearly statement or next year's earnings if there is a no-deal cliff-edge Brexit? Thanks.
Okay, thank you for your question. Yes, we announced the Assure settlement in late August, and we announced at the time that we'd pay around $1.6 billion to resolve roughly 90% of the 39,000 filed and unfiled claims. And on top of that, the consideration also includes an allowance for the cases that have not yet been filed. So it is essentially 100% amount here for the entire Assure litigation. We also continue to make progress here. We will make or have already made first payments, yeah, and we are in advanced process of resolution. To your second question, you know, first and foremost, it's important for us that we can serve patients. Also in a Brexit scenario. This whole situation has been kind of a hangover for the last few years. We were well prepared for an uncoordinated Brexit. We are still well prepared for an uncoordinated Brexit. And the most important thing here is that we continue to have working supply chains. Yeah, that's what we ensured. And just to give you a perspective on the criticality thereof, the most difficult area for us with typical customs timelines and the like is that we get our radiopharmaceutical products to patients very quickly because they are subject to a very rapid decay. Also here, we have provided for solutions that allow us essentially an on-the-spot delivery to patients who are in dire need of these products because they are otherwise in very, very bad pain. These are prostate cancer patients. Last but not least, the regulatory framework that is to be expected after Brexit will evolve over time. Yeah, so there's going to be transitional arrangements that we do understand well and that have been studied in detail. So we don't expect and anticipate that we have major negative impacts that would lead to, let's say, asset write-downs. We'll see how the overall situation of the British economy is going to evolve. But that is something that is very much the same for all companies that do business in the UK, and that's just about what I can say relative to the Brexit situation.
And the last question is once again from the English telephone conference. Kevin Rogan, the floor is yours.
Hello, yes, I've got a few pharma questions. Thank you very much. First of all, have you secured an accelerated assessment for finerenone from the EMA? Second is, you talked about stringent cost management in pharma. Can you give me a few details specifically? I mean, obviously with COVID, has the sort of the spends, or travel spends have disappeared. Can you give me some more details? Also, third one is with Europe going back into lockdown, is this going to slow down the recovery of Eylea? And also, how have you been dealing with the competition of Beovu? And finally, could you just give me some comments on the settlement for Xarelto with Unichem, which I think was last month? And also, what's the patent situation for Xarelto in Europe? Thanks very much.
So I'm sorry. So first of all, let me start with the pandemic situation. We've seen a significant impact of the lockdown, in particular in elective treatments, with Eylea being one of them. Eylea was heavily hit in quarter two. It saw a complete recovery into positive territory with a plus 2% growth in quarter three. And it remains to be seen how severe the measures are going to be that governments have implemented and will continue to implement. Of course, people have by now learned to live with the pandemic. You know, they protect themselves better. But I cannot give you, let's say, any perspective because we lack you know, the basis to give you a specific perspective. I would hope that the impact on the elective treatments would be lower than the first time around because, again, people have actually learned to live better with the situation. When it comes to the patent situation of Xarelto, we have the first patents that will expire actually in China by the end of this year. Now, patent protection in China is a different thing compared to other countries. It very much, the Chinese market still very much operates in segments like branded generics market, which we you know, have largely benefited from over the last decade plus, and we'll see what that yields. The rest of the countries is mostly the 2023-2024 time frame. That we are exposed to patent expirations in Europe. In the U.S., the situation is a little bit different because we do have a once-daily patent that is valid until 2034. We have reached a number of agreements with underfilers to provide them with earlier access. So we assume that the exclusivity period, de facto exclusivity period, might last a little bit longer than the patent protection, which including the pediatric extension would otherwise end in early 2025. Yeah. So that's just about all I can say relative to settlements and the patent situation with Xarelto. Your other question on finerenone, we have communicated and published good clinical data. I cannot go beyond in this call and would ask you that you will come back to you on that question.
Good. And the cost measure?
Pardon?
Yeah, I can take that. Yeah, we I mean, we were walking the cost on all fronts, as you can imagine. With the pandemic, that automatically came significant savings in travel and event cost. A good portion of that will be, by the way, sustainable because we were nicely invested in digital interaction with our healthcare professionals, and that really paid off. Obviously, on all flexible spend like consulting, projects that are not mission critical, we put the brakes on, and the business is not coming out at the growth expectation that we originally predicted, we are obviously having some savings on the variable incentive programs as well. Let me finish by saying that we did not cut any cost on investments in future research, future development. So that's also clear.
I do have a quick update on finerenone. So the Fidelio data will be discussed in an upcoming congress, most likely the ASN 2020, you know, in the next time to come, still this year. And then we are discussing our data with the relevant health authorities for the submission of our marketing authorization.
Good. Vielen herzlichen Dank. Ja, meine Damen und Herren.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for your interest, for your attention and your questions, and for the fruitful discussion. We wish you a very good day, and of course, most important, stay healthy. Thank you very much.